Hi, this is Matt Welsh with Spiritual Media Blog, and today I'm here with J.D. Messinger, author of 11 Days in May, The Conversation That Would Change Your Life. J.D., thanks so much for being here with us today.
Well, thanks, Matt. It's my honor.
And tell us about yourself. I mean, you have had a pretty interesting life, a lot of different careers, a lot of different occupations. Do you mind telling us a little bit about your background professionally?
Yeah, sure. I began life as a fireman, and then I enlisted in the Navy and applied to and got accepted at the Naval Academy, graduated, and I was one of Rickover's boys, as they call it, a nuclear submarine officer. And after that, I joined Exxon. With Exxon, I was the executive who supervised the Valdez oil spill cleanup in 1989. I had a lot of different jobs as national director of safety and distribution and sales and things like that. Left Exxon, joined Ernst & Young, and I became one of four global energy partners that traveled around the world doing large merger integration, outsourcing, ERP implementations. Moved to Asia, and I became the CEO of Ernst & Young in Asia, in Singapore, Southeast Asia, Thailand, Philippines, Malaysia, that's Southeast Asia. And I was advisor to prime ministers and royal family members. I've written position papers for three U.S. presidents on energy. I like to joke and say that I had so much left-brain stuff in me, reactor kinetics, physics, chemistry, metallurgy, underwater acoustics, that I walked with a port list. That means I was leaning to my left.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I think that's just fascinating because you have such a strong background in science, yet you experienced something that some people would say that science may not ever be able to truly explain, which was a near-death experience. Do you mind talking a little bit about what that was like, your near-death experience?
Yeah, no, of course. What happened was I broke my neck, and when that happened, which is, you know, the story is kind of interesting. I had injured my neck in the submarine fleet in 1985. I had gotten hit by a beam that snapped my neck back and crushed my vertebrae, and that healed over time, but unbeknownst to me, from 1985 to the year 2000, my neck was slowly deteriorating as I did all of those jobs in Exxon and Ernst & Young that I was telling you about. So on the morning of January 18th of 2000, I had been in a lot of pain, and I was taking a lot of pills, Motrin, you know, anti-inflammation painkillers. And I was really consciously unaware of how bad I was. And so on that morning, I put my arms in the air to stretch, and the last little thing that was holding my neck together snapped, and it twisted my spinal column around. And it felt like somebody was trying to split me in half with an axe. And the pain was just absolutely excruciating. And the next thing I knew was the essence of me, which is really not physical. No pain, no body. I was above my body, and I watched my body collapse like a rag doll. It was like pulling the plug out, and the thing just went bloop, you know, and it flopped onto the desk, and it flopped onto the floor. And I had an out-of-body experience, and then I had this near-death experience. I mean, I went through a tunnel. I mean, it's a beautiful tunnel. It's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. It's like a kid going down a water slide with blue tubes and sparkling lights like sparklers, and then I went through a gateway. And meanwhile, the doctors that were working on me, they rushed me to the hospital. They took bone out of my hip and put my neck back together. During the following weeks and months, you know, I had to learn how to walk and talk and chew gum again, and I had no feeling in my neck because the nerves had been crushed and the nerves down my arm were crushed. And I had, difficulty talking. And then I started to have unusual, metaphysical experiences. That's a short story.
Yeah, I want to hear more about the metaphysical experiences, but a lot of people talk about when they have these near-death experiences, it's a truly transformative change in their life. I mean, prior to the metaphysical experiences, did you have any changes in your attitude or beliefs or the way you wanted to live your life? Did that come immediately after your near-death experience?
Well, it certainly completely changed my life, and I called it a blessing in disguise. You know, it didn't look good for a couple of years. It felt terrible. It was depressing. It was painful. But it totally altered my life because a lot of things happened to me. I became fluent in Mandarin in 60 hours. I had dreams and visions of future events, all of which in years subsequent on my radio show and on television shows around the world, I shared those insights, but I never told people they were visions. I just told people we were going to have an energy crisis, and I told them about the financial crisis. And these radio shows are all on my website at jdmessenger.com, you know, years before they happened. But I never told them that I sort of knew and saw that, you know, these things were going to happen. And I watched my hand write, not knowing what it was writing. I had what I call the wow effect, writing on the wall, which is when I just see letters, kind of like that BBC show with Sherlock Holmes where they show him in his mind's eye the formulas and calculations and things. I just see writing, and this is something that is a very strong gift. It felt like a curse, just getting all kinds of information and knowledge about things that I had never studied and could never possibly know. And that's how the book 11 Days in May was written. We can talk about that in a minute, but it was terrifying. And I went on a 10-year search from 2000 to 2010, you know, trying to understand, okay, these things are really happening. You know, the fact and the evidence is in front of me. I'm not hallucinating. I'm not imagining. There's something going on here, and I had to research and travel around the world and interviewed hundreds of Nobel laureates and theologians and physicists and 1,500 research papers. You know, I had to save my sanity, and the left brain nuclear engineer math major had to prove that this was real, you know, in the best scientific method that I could use.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating coming from the science background. Did you ever doubt this or feel like maybe this isn't real? Maybe this is just something that is just happens when people have a near-death experience. How did you deal with that, or just come to the conclusion that it was real?
I mean, I absolutely doubted it. I mean, I doubted it. You know, take a phenomenon like having a premonition or an intuition or a vision or an insight of a future event. I mean, I had dreams where I saw a game, which is described in the first parable. The book, 11 Days in May, is 36 short parables, which are in a conversation format, and it's basically between me and an unnamed friend. And so the whole book is a conversation that took place, a real conversation that took place in 11 days in May of 2012. It's just that there wasn't any other person present. It was me asking the questions and getting the writing on the wall and writing the answers, and I was totally unconscious of what I was writing. So that book is an example of something that, you know, how does that happen? I had dreams about games and things that I invented and created. Well, where did that information come from? I mean, I made four world-first inventions or innovations, including the e-book for 11 Days in May. So when something is not, it doesn't exist, you know, Walt Disney's Epcot, Nikola Tesla's alternating current motor, you know, talk to any, you know, inventors and creators, they'll tell you the same thing. They had dreams, they had visions, they had insights. So, you know, the left-brained engineer is like, okay, if that never existed before, where did it come from? You know, it's not in the collective consciousness. And so other events, you know, talking about time, you know, how can you have a vision of something that happens in the future? Well, you know, Einstein talks about time. Time isn't linear. It doesn't go in one direction. It wraps around. And there are, you know, I think probably in my anecdotal talking and surveys, 50% of the people have inspirations and intuitions or premonitions about things. Thoughts, you know, how come when you stare at a person and they'll turn around and look and see that you're staring. So there's, you know, we could talk for 3 hours about the various phenomenon that is all involving energy. You know, we can talk about our brain and how our brain works. You know, our brain is like a transducer and a receiver on our submarines. It is sending and receiving information. Now, like on my submarine, if I'm following a Russian sub, I'm hearing a bunch of background noise, snapping shrimp, singing whales, ocean sounds. Well, that noise blocks out my ability to hear the target, so we put in filters. So our brain is the same way. You see, you and I are surrounded by, you know, 40 billion emails, every television show, radio show, transmission in the world right now. And this is, no one would question that any of 7 billion people with 7 billion mobile phones could go anywhere in the world, turn on their phone with their unique ID and frequency set based on numerological codes and pick up their email, right?
Right.
Okay. So given that that information is all flying around, is it also a given that your mobile phone, did you know that it is like less than a billionth the power of the supercomputer on our head, you know, on our shoulders, our brains?
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, our brains are the most powerful computer in the world, sending more than 500 trillion electrical impulses to 100 trillion cells. There isn't a supercomputer in the world that can replicate what our brains do. So if our brain is billions, if not trillions of times more powerful than a phone, and a phone can send and receive information, well, the brain can send and receive information, you see? And the thing that tunes whether we send or, you know, whether we receive something is the frequencies. It's like the filters. And so we have on our shoulders the ability to receive information. And all you have to do is learn how to train it or tune it. And, you know, a lot of people call these spiritual practices. Ask and you receive, or clear your mind, meditate, ask for guidance. You know, all of these things, which have been said from all the philosophers, from Pythagoras to Socrates to the masters, you know, Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, Lao Tzu. You know, I mean, they've all been saying the same thing, but now we can explain it, or at least I explain it, using science and physics. And, you know, so if we picked a simple, you know, we could pick one of those examples. The way I proved it to myself was I would have an experience, and I would triangulate it. I would get the research. I would have my own experience. I would have the physical facts in front of me. And then I would find the science, and, you know, I would prove that this, how this phenomenon could work. That was probably a long-winded answer, but that's what I would do. And I did that for all of these phenomenon, whether it was intuitions, what people might call channeling or automatic writing. And it's nothing different than what Walt Disney or Nikola Tesla or Mozart would say. You know, Mozart was quoted as saying that he didn't write music, he heard the music, and he just wrote what he heard, and it was flawless. That was the same 11 days in May. The book was written in 11 days, and it basically needed no editing.
Yeah, that sounds really like a cool, exciting process. What are you hoping that readers will learn from 11 Days in May? What are some of the ideas in it?
Well, the 36 parables include things like, you know, who am I, why am I here, what is love, what is war, what is sex, what is time, what is death, what is matter. But the main message behind the book and the purpose of the book is really, and again, I had no intention of writing this book. I didn't even know I was writing the book. When I was done writing for 11 days, my wife said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I think I wrote a book." And she said, "What's it about?" And I said, "I don't know. I haven't read it yet." So the book really helps you discover your truth. You know, who are you and why are you here? And what is the nature of reality? What causes suffering? Why do we not believe in ourselves? What are the limiting beliefs and where do these limiting beliefs come from? And so it's really at an individual level, at a self-transformation, self-help, personal growth perspective, it's helping you become all you're meant to be by removing the limiting thoughts and the source of confusion and helping you discover your truth. At a sort of a social level, it's really trying to help society wake up.
And you talk about this process of automatic writing. Why do you think some people have those experiences of automatic writing or near-death experience and other people don't have those sort of mystical experiences or unique phenomenons?
Well, I mean, those are all kind of different things. Near-death is certainly very different from automatic writing. So let me just say that gotten over 100,000 emails. I've spoken to thousands of people, and based on the conversations with the people, as well as some research, anecdotal information would say that 50% of the people know someone who has had a near-death experience or have had a near-death experience. It is not that uncommon. What many people have had terrible accidents. And they will tell you it's a miracle you're alive or you should be dead, but they're not, and they're fine, okay? Now, what they probably don't have any recollection of what happened, I mean, I didn't recall what happened to me immediately. It comes in flashes, like in dreams or visions. And I went to regression, you know, went to a famous psychiatrist, a psychiatrist, and had regression analysis and relived it and then remembered it. So I think many people that have had terrible incidences that would almost kill them, if they went through regression and were open to that hypnotic state, I think that they would tap in and remember that they nearly died and they were saved. Now, I had, by the way, I had like 10 or more strangers. I just stopped counting. Total strangers come up to me over a period of years and say, "Did you know you nearly died? Did you know that you were saved by an angel?" And, you know, that was another experience. Now, as far as automatic writing, actually... Let's just talk about intuition and premonitions for a minute. Everybody gets these. You just don't trust it. You don't believe it. You know, when I spoke at New York City, 20% of the people that came were survivors from 9/11, and they knew it was going to happen. They had premonitions or insights or visions or dreams, and it really spooked them. But you see, we all have this ability. With 100 trillion cells and a supercomputer, we receive information. We just don't trust it and we don't follow it. If you start a dream journal or if you start following your intuition, it will become stronger and you will begin to realize that you have this gift and it is one of the most powerful gifts you have. Now, automatic writing is different, okay? I absolutely do believe that everyone has the ability to create and invent. There's nothing special or unique or gifted about me. The thing that's different about me is I worked on it. I did the work. You have to do the work. first of all, you can't be polluting your mind and your body with alcohol and antidepressants and marijuana or medication and pills and all that sort of stuff. When you pollute your body with all those things that are not natural, then your natural abilities are weakened. So that's one. So right there, you're eliminating a large part of the population. Number two is you've got to do some the mental work. Besides the physical work of having your body well, you got to do the mental work. The mental work requires you to calm your mind, requires you to clear your mind, which right there, a lot of people can't clear their mind. You also have to, you know, the third thing is you have to be able to do some certain techniques that, for the most part, I'll say are many of the yoga positions, and those, but it's not just yoga. I mean, there's certain stretches and exercises that you are doing that are opening up your spinal column, opening up the energy that's flowing through your body and allowing that energy to flow better, faster, smoother. So once you've got the mind prepared and your body is reasonably removed of substances that inhibit your natural abilities, and your body has done some of those techniques, then you begin to receive.
Yeah, and you sound like perfected those techniques. And one attitude or way to help clear your mind you've talked about before in your book, it sounds like, is letting go of the need for control. Yeah. Do you mind talking a little bit about that and how we can do that?
Yeah, you see, there's a battle that goes on, and we say we're in pain, but we're not really in physical pain. Pain is physical. What we're really doing is suffering. And suffering, one of the parables says, what is suffering? Suffering is when your head's trying to go north and your heart's trying to go south, and it rips you in half. And the symptom that you're suffering is when you get angry, emotional, judgmental. You know, all of these negative symptoms are an indication of something that is wrong inside us. We blame it on other people, but it's actually a source of discomfort or disease inside us. Now, so control and fear are things that come from the mind. And love and compassion and generosity and tolerance and patience and forgiveness are things that come from the heart. So when you're smiling and you're having fun and you're playing and you're helping other people, that's all the stuff that's coming from the heart. And we all know that that feels great. And by the way, the energy field, measured energy field of the heart is 5,000 times larger than the field of energy from the mind. And the force, or the magnitude of the energy from the heart, is 50 times greater than the energy from your mind. So when we say love is powerful, it really is, scientifically. Now, so you can recognize when someone is in their head or in their mind or in their heart. So when you're in your head, it's all about you. It's all about me, you know, my desires, my needs, my gratification, my money, my job, my time, as opposed to the heart, which is the opposite of those things. And so when we are not complete, when our heart and soul are not aligned and we're suffering, then we will try to control the outcome. We will be motivated by fear or desire for the senses, you know, short-term gratification, pleasure, sex, whatever it might be, money, power, you know, that's all from the head. Now, when you let go of those things, which is extremely difficult to do, I mean, everyone has to work on this all the time. I work on this every day, you know. Because it's part of our natural condition of our body and the way the human condition is. But letting go of the need to control, letting go of the outcome, letting go of being attached to titles, positions, power, letting go of, you know, controlling the situation or the relationship. The irony is, it is so simple to do, but it's a hard thing to do. But the big irony is, when you do let go and you open up, you discover that you're being guided and helped, that relationships and people and events and things, your life becomes more abundant, more satisfying, more fulfilling. And the mind can't grasp that. You know, if the mind struggles with that.
Yeah, I think, like you said, it is one of the hardest, it's also simple things to do and does take work. I mean, any suggestions or advice on how to work on that on a daily basis? I mean, you mentioned the meditation and the yoga, but just when we get caught in the moment of...
I mean, some simple techniques, right? I put a rubber band on my wrist, and I have it there now. Most of the time I have it there. And whenever I'm having a situation where I'm getting angry, depressed, or emotional, or feeling something agitating, I snap the rubber band, which to me means snap out of it, you know. Now, the faster you catch yourself, you know, when you're starting this, you might not snap it for 3 days, and then as you start to realize, you become more aware of the reaction in your body, that you're like a program, like a robot or a machine. You know, the faster you end up snapping it and catching yourself, the more present you're becoming in the now. And to the point where you'll get to a part where you might go reach for snapping it and not have to even snap it. So the snap out of it technique with a rubber band is just to help you catch and become aware of what is going on. The second thing it can do is identify the source of what that problem was, you know. Now, that can be very difficult. You can write it down. What am I afraid of? You know, what am I afraid of? What am I afraid of? Why did I act that way? What happened to me? Where is this? Where did this come from in me? And you can try to identify the source of the faulty or outdated program that stores or cells. And the computer analogy is a really good one. You've got a virus software program in you, and it's from an experience or a family member. And I believe in past lives because I've experienced so many of them. And so I think some of these things come from past life experiences. Now, another technique is what I call pivot. Or flip. In other words, take the negative issue and completely turn it upside down and inside out. Don't think about it. Don't write it. Don't talk about it. Promote the positive, uplifting thing. And, you know, an example might be, you know, you get angry at people and you lose your temper and you shout at them. So that's the thing that you don't want. So the positive uptick or the positive affirmation, the thing that you write, is that I calmly listen to people, I am aware of what others are saying and their needs, and I am listening to help them and fulfill their needs, or I am considerate of others. You know, all those things. You're writing the opposite, and what you're actually doing is really creating a program that becomes stored in your cells, because you got to override that virus program that's in your cells. Now, another technique is, let me see, I said snap out of it, pivot or flip it, you know, write the positive affirmation. Another technique, if you really feel like you're really depressed, you're really being attacked, is go in the water, take a shower, go in a bath, go in a pool, go in the ocean is the best. Because energy, water is very dense. Water is so dense that we would surround the nuclear reactor with a foot of water to prevent the radiation from contaminating us. And so that's how dense water is. So when you go into the water, the first thing is the energy from other people and the environment, all the things flying around us, which you may not be conscious of, but it is affecting you. It is. Your body is picking it up, but you're just not consciously processing it. When you jump in the water, it can't get to you. And so the other thing it does is it purifies you. So anyone, I've had many people email me about this parable in the book that talks about this, going, my God, I always wondered, why did I get so creative in the water? Why do I feel so relaxed in the water? You know, this is the physical effect. You're taking away the other energy, and you're purifying yourself, and you're feeling your own energy. You're more in touch with your own feelings and emotions. And that's our natural state, Matt. You know, our natural state is to be happy and joyful and uplifted. If you can't go into the water, then go hug a tree. I mean, this is energy. Everything is energy, which is photons, which is light. I'm a light being. I was born in the world of light. I'm living in the world of light, which is stuck together in form through binding energy. Nothing is solid. You know, I mean, solid is a word we use to describe energy in form. But if you look in my finger 100 million times, you're going to see nothing. You're going to start to see clouds of energy, but it's just energy. And energy is basically what looks like empty space. It's just held together by binding forces. So when you get all this energy running through you, any electrical engineers out there or electricians will understand, you got to ground energy. So how do we ground energy? We put lightning rods in our house, and we put that energy and we dissipate it into the ground. So when you go out and hug a tree, you're actually transferring energy between you and the tree, and that energy is being dissipated into the ground. Now, people might think this is crazy, but I was talking last night. I was coaching an electrical engineer at a very large, well-known company, and he totally got it. He said, I totally know what you're saying, you know? So that's another way to get out in nature, hug a tree, walk around. You know, we're talking about energy fields, and these are some of the techniques to externally cleanse the energy or internally reprogram the energy.
Yeah, that sounds really cool that an electrical engineer was able to sort of get this and grasp these concepts. What sort of other reactions have you got from people who have read your book or heard you talk?
Well, in the business world, you know, I did one event where I was in a $20 million penthouse suite overlooking Central Park in New York, and there was a lot of big executives from very large institutions there. And, you know, I stayed a little bit away from the spirituality, you know, woo-woo kind of stuff, and I just talked to them like this from the scientific perspective. And they just swarmed me going, you know, because of who you are and what you've done and your credibility, you just walked me down a path where I can understand and accept the phenomenon from my business, scientific, or engineering and professional point of view. And I'm like, oh, my God, thank you. I've never had that. The other thing is there's always a group of people who come up to me and say, can I tell you something I've never told anyone? And I know what's going to happen. They're going to tell me. They tell me about how they see angels, talk to souls, have near-death experiences, and they're ashamed and embarrassed. But let me tell you something. This is a fairly uniquely United States problem. When I travel to 25 countries around the world, the rest of the world, including places in Italy and Germany and France and certainly Asia and India or Ecuador or Latin America and countries, they don't have a problem with this. They totally get it. You know, they're more spiritual than religious. Now, you see, now religion, all religions are spiritual, but spirituality is not a religion. You know, when we look at the word spirit, it comes from the root word inspire, and inspire basically comes from the word to breathe, which means breath, which is what is the energy force. The energy. You know, I said this to a guy I was coaching this morning, a business executive, you know, one of the fast Fortune 50 fast company executives or whatever, something like that. And I said, did you know that there's enough energy in our bodies? You know, I was a nuclear submarine officer. I had the nuclear weapons on the submarine. I said, if you were to release all of the binding energy holding my body together, or your body, it would blow up the state of Texas. He's like, no way. Yeah, way. That's how much energy is in us. Now, Nobel laureates have proven that that energy is not coming from the mass of our body. the energy that's in our body is less than 5% from these hydrogen, oxygen molecules that are kind of, you know, nitrogen holding us together. The vast energy comes from our breath and the energy, the air and the water, you know. So that's, that energy is, you know, in a lot of it comes from the sun. You know, the sun is the source of all energy. It is the source of energy in all the plants, and that's all the energy that goes into all the food and that's in all of our body. I mean, and that energy, you know, you can't, you know, that energy that's coming from the sun is just being transformed into form. But we can absorb that energy. That's one of the reasons why we need vitamin D. It's why we go out in the sun. Vitamin D, that energy from the sun, is one of the greatest things to prevent, to strengthen your immune system. You see, Matt, when you start to put all these pieces together, you know, that everything is energy and how much energy and where the energy comes from and how it gets into the food or how it comes into our body through air, it all starts to create a different mosaic, you know? Now, I totally forgot whatever the question was, but oh, the people. So these people get blown away by these stories, but there are, I don't believe there is a single person walking on this planet that hasn't had one of the following, you know, intuition, premonition, near death, a deceased soul on the other side communicating to them. That, by the way, is one of the number one emails and messages I get. Because I saw angels. I mean, now, when I saw an angel in front of me, I really thought I was crazy, okay? But I wasn't. I wasn't smoking, drinking, anything. I never do. You know, I mean, I never, you know, I don't take any marijuana or drugs or anything like that, hallucinogens, I never have. And this was a very real phenomenon. And so when you think about the field of energy is like, it's like 10 pianos end to end. So there's 880 piano keys. So there's 880 spectrums of energy. And we are only seeing 8 keys. Visible light is only 8 of those key 880 keys in the field of energy. So there's 872 more keys in this energy keyboard. Reality is not what you see, you know? And by the way, you don't see sunlight. You see the reflection of the light. You know, when you look out your window and you see the tree, that's not, it's a reflection of the light that's coming from the sun that helps you see the tree. Because when the sun's on the other side, you can't see the tree, right? But you're not seeing the light. You're not seeing the light. People, it's like, oh, let's look at the sunlight. You can't see sunlight. You know? You're seeing a reflection of the energy. And I mean, that in itself is sort of an interesting metaphor for we see things and we don't see things, but there are many things that we are not seeing, which is not reflected by the light. You see what I'm saying? You know, it's not reflected. These angels or these other beings and all of the emails. Okay, let me ask you this. You agree that there's billions of emails flying around and billions of documents and billions of photos, right?
Yeah, I know where you're, I think I know where you're going with this, but yeah.
Can you see them? Can you see them right now?
No.
No, but they're there, aren't they?
Right.
Yep, they're there. You know, how about love? You know, love is a powerful force. Can you see love? No. And we just said, can you see the sunlight? No, you don't see sunlight.
Yeah, so, you're right. I mean, even our voices now are traveling through invisible
This conversation is being converted into numbers, digital digits. Those digits are being converted into a frequency. That frequency is being converted into light beams and sent through satellites and coming back. This conversation is a non-physical world of light, invisible effect, but it's real.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, that's a good comparison. That makes a lot of sense. Helps people understand some of these phenomena, how they might happen.
So, Some people are more aware. Some people are in denial and resistance. Most of the people that are in denial and resistance are there because of fear. The greatest source of fear is because you don't feel loved. The lack of feeling love, which is the most powerful and wonderful and beautiful force, that fear comes from lots of things, being rejected, being beaten, abused, being not listened to, and maybe the real or not real experiences, maybe the child within thought they weren't loved. But that is one of the greatest fears. Unfortunately, in society in the United States, we are perpetuating tremendous fear. We're fighting Republicans versus Democrats, Christians versus Muslims, science versus faith. And we have resorted to the mind. This is all battle of the mind. In the epilogue, 11 Days in May, it talks about how, we're 99.9% the same DNA. We're less than 1 in 1 billion parts biologically different. The only thing that makes us think we're different are those thoughts. And the moment we start shifting our thoughts and start promoting more positive and uplifting information, start being more considerate, more loving, more tolerant, then we'll start changing the world and we'll start to be happier and healthier.
Yeah, I think that's a great message, and it sounds like that's definitely something your book promotes. If people wanted to get a copy of your book, where could they find it?
Well, my website is jdmessenger.com, and I've got my coaching programs there, and you can click the link to buy the book on iTunes, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You could buy the book from my shopping cart if you wanted to. It's on all the major e-tailers, not in too many bookstores, but you can buy it on Amazon, and Barnes & Noble is probably the best place.
JD, I really appreciate your time and talking to us about your book. It sounds great. The way it came about sounds great. We've got a couple more minutes left. Do you have any closing remarks you want to leave our listeners with?
I would say that you don't have to believe or accept any of the things that I was just talking about. But if you do one thing, then follow your heart. Disney had it right, do what you love, love what you do, follow your heart, have fun, let go, relax. You don't actually need a lot of the things that you think you need. Somebody's trying to convince you that you want it. And when you let go of those things and really ask yourself, what do I really need? What do I really want? What makes me happy? You discover that you've got this internal guidance system inside you we call our heart, our feelings, our passion, our love, our joy. And try to find that space and nurture it and trust it. Trust your intuition. Make notes about intuitions or inspiration or hunches. Start following them, and you'll see that it's like magic. It's magic. Great things happen
when you
follow your heart.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that message with our listeners. It's so important, and the more we hear it, different forms, different ways, I think the easier it becomes for us to follow. So definitely appreciate you sharing that with us today.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'm really honored, and I'm grateful, so thank you.
All right, thank you.